Good morning and welcome. It's time for Final Draft on 2SER 107.3, books, writing and literary culture, presented by me. My name's Andrew Popel, and it's a bit wet, it's a bit rainy this week, but what better time to find that perfect new book and sort of snuggle in and, you know, just get reading, discover some amazing Australian literature. I have got a fabulous Australian book to share with you today. It is Rosalie Ham's The Year of the Farmer. If you recognise that name, Rosalie Ham is the author of The Dressmaker, her debut novel that was turned into the fantastic 2015 film starring Kate Winslet. Year of the Farmer is coming up today, but before we get to that, I just wanted to, look, maybe you're familiar with the 2SER Great Conversations podcast, where I share extended interviews with authors and we really get down to it with their books. It's been going for 3 months, and thank you to everyone who's supported it. There is a new podcast if you love books. It's called the 2SER Book Club. And Tess Connery and I, Tess from 2SER Breakfast every weekday morning, we discuss fantastic new books and we discover what there is to like about them and make some recommendations to you. So you can go to wherever you get your podcasts, search for 2SER Book Club and discover some more great writing. Now, today it is Rosalie Ham's The Year of the Farmer, where we travel to a drought-stricken rural community in New South Wales. And on Bishop's Corner, they have been suffering from the drought for 5 years. Mitchell Bishop has been suffering, especially since the love of his life left town. He's now married. The town is none too happy with it because he's their golden boy. And with drought restrictions getting worse and worse, nobody knows who's renovating the pub and what it will mean for the community. This is a tinderbox ready to light in Rosalie Ham's The Year of the Farmer. And Rosalie is going to be joining me today to discuss. We're going to discuss rural communities, we're going to discuss the drought, and we're going to discuss what we really understand about this section of Australian culture. That's on Final Draft today. My name's Andrew Popel, and it's coming up after this short break.
Antenna Documentary Film Festival returns for 2018, bringing you the best in documentary cinema from around the world, with a program full of thought-provoking stories that range from the humorous to the shocking, the real to the surreal. Antenna promises to have your mind reeling long after the credits roll. Antenna runs October 9 to 14. Documentary lovers, get your tickets now at antennafestival.org. Antenna Documentary Film Festival, sponsors of 2SER 107.3.
You are on 2SER 107.3. This is Final Draft. My name is Andrew Popel, and I'm joined on the line by Rosalie Ham. Rosalie's the author of 4 novels, including Summer at Mount Hope and There Should Be More Dancing. Her debut novel, The Dressmaker, has received worldwide acclaim and was made into a feature film of the same name. And today, we're really fortunate. We've got a 4th novel, The Year of the Farmer. Welcome, Rosalie. I am so excited.
Thank you. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you. Nice to be here.
Now, in The Year of the Farmer, we find 5 years of drought have been hard on Bishop's Corner. They've been hard on the whole region, but Mitchell Bishop has suffered especially since Neralee McIntosh left town for the city. Mitch is now married to Mandy, against everyone's wishes, and she's hell-bent on getting the respect that she feels she's owed as Mrs. Bishop. Now, with the Water Authority cutting allocations to irrigators, no one's got any money to pay anyone else, and the pub's got a new owner that might just tip the whole region into a civil war. I've got to be honest, when I picked it up, I thought, okay, I'm very interested in this book, but I had no idea how interesting you could make farming and irrigation.
Oh, God, I'm so happy you said that, because when I posed the idea of writing a book on irrigation, well, you know, there was a little bit of resistance towards it because it's not a topic that people are naturally drawn to, nor are they interested in, which is why I had to have all that drama with the town folk and marry all that drama to water. And so I'm delighted that that you're engaged in that story, as have been a few other people.
The Year of the Farmer can sit alongside Gregory Day's A Sand Archive for me this year, which very much focuses on the fluid dynamics of sand, as books that have really surprised me with topics that I wasn't aware could be so interesting. But as you say, water is at the heart of the novel, and the discussions in The Year of the Farmer And these are real circumstances across Australia at the moment. And for me, it brought home the impact that drought has, not only for those working the land, but to a whole community who must struggle and they've got to compromise together. It's not just a single group of people, it's the whole community. Were you hoping that you'd give readers some insight into this sort of life in drought?
Absolutely. And you've just made me the happiest author in Australia, because what I set out to do was exactly what you've just said. You know, that's how the book affected you, and that's what I wanted, because there's a gap between how people perceive the country and what they think happens there, and their idea about water, where it comes from, what it does, the argument over it. There's a gap between that and urban Australia, and indeed between the people that fund and support, or supposedly support, farmers, and what they understand about what actually does happen. So I kind of wanted to write something that would present the plight of the farmers and their communities in a way that was palatable for people that didn't have a clue. And it was going to be a hard thing to do, but I'm really happy that it's been received the way it has been.
Well, I mean, I remember other times of drought that New South Wales has faced, and water restrictions being brought into place, everyone being encouraged to, you wash your car with a bucket, you take short showers. And I haven't heard as much rhetoric around that for people in urban areas. Like, I mean, I'm in the middle of Sydney right now recording. But I feel like every reader will find their own angle on the year of the farmer. And the world of the book you have is divided into the farmers, the townies, the riparians, there's blow-ins, there's the ferals. And in much the same way, I think the readers will, they're going to recognise aspects of their own worldview and prejudices. And you play with that and you use satire elements of, I feel, all of these people. Did you want this particularly to challenge people's perspectives, for them to see parts of themselves, even if they've never come anywhere near a small town?
Yeah, no, that's the empathy thing. That's what you try to do, and that's why you get certain characters, or that's why I do anyway, so that people can empathise. And the other thing that I needed the characters to do, at the same time as be likeable and readable and, you know, be engaged with, they've all got, every single one of them's got a valid point. They're all right. Like, the ferals are right, the townies are right, the riparians are correct, and of course so are the irrigators. And all their perceptions of what's important to them, you know, they're all true. And they all also depend on each other. So what happens in those groups is that, so you identify with one lot and then you go, oh no, actually I can see the point of the riparian. So you're not quite sure whose side to be on. So, like, ultimately, you know, it is the outsider, it is the person that's working against the greater good, and that would be Mandy. So she, in a ironical kind of way, unites all of those groups for the greater good. So it's kind of the divide and conquer, and at the same time try to make it, all those different groups, human and relatable, so people do understand the difficulty of the whole problem, especially in a small isolated community that's already battling for survival.
I'm in a very tough position right now, Rosalie, because as an interviewer, Mitch and Mandy are both such interesting subjects to discuss. But let's talk about Mandy, because she is certainly one of the most interesting villains that I have encountered in a long time. And you play with our sympathies. You reveal her past of neglect, the suicide of her father. Ultimately, though, she's a whirlwind of destruction through everyone's lives. Like, you constantly surprised me with the things that she got up to. Where does a character like this come from?
There's one in every group. There's just one of those people that's kind of
I've never
annoying.
Met anyone like her, though.
No, but I don't think there is anyone exactly like her that you would often encounter. But I, like, if you observe people, you can see how some people work the system. There's some people that possibly aren't very bright in lots of ways, but they're cunning. And so they'll manipulate things to suit themselves. And people with their own personal agenda that basically looking after themselves, and everybody around them is somehow destroyed by them, and they just follow and go with that person because it's easier. So there's elements of that kind of person that I've encountered in my years of living. And there's also people that are just naturally abrasive. They're just people that purposely take the opposing opinion just for the sake of argument. And they're probably not even aware that they're going to do it, but for the that they are doing it. But for the purposes of this book and for, you know, that one person to side with the enemy and try to destroy the community, there's a parallel there with vermin. And there's, you know, the parallel with you're being more destructive, you're not supporting the group. This is for the survival of us all, so you need to be dealt with. So, but I also love to dramatise. I've got a pretty vivid imagination, so as I was writing her, I just made her worse and worse and worse, because it had, what happened to her in the end had to be justifiable. I had to have the readers on side thinking, yes, you deserve that.
You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3, where you're listening to Final Draft. My name is Andrew Popel, and I have been speaking with Rosalie Hamm about her new novel, The Year of the Farmer, investigating what it's like in a drought-stricken town in rural New South Wales. I'm going to come back with more of my conversation with Rosalie, but we're going to take a track to get us there. This is from Amber Arcades, and it's called Oh My Love. tuned in to 2SER 107.3. This is Final Draft, and right there we just heard a track from Amber Arcades. It was called Oh My Love. My name is Andrew Popel. Now, this is Final Draft. It's books, writing and literary culture every week. And right now, I am in conversation with Rosalie Ham. We're discussing her new novel, The Year of the Farmer, where Rosalie takes us into a drought-stricken community and we explore the dynamics of what happens with competing interests around water. It is fascinating, and I really want to get back deeper into it with Rosalie.
There is a central tension amongst all the other difficulties in the small town, and we've got to think that the book really has kind of a 5-year arc. We are at the end of 5 years of difficulty because of the drought. Mitch narrowly had left 5 years previously, and that's when Mandy sort of came onto the scene for Mitch. Of course, they all grew up together, but the marriage of Mitch and Mandy, we hear much reflection on the need for a marriage on a farm to be a suitable match, and Mandy is definitely not suitable. But we also learn of a character through the actions in the novel. It's not immediately apparent. In fact, having read the blurb and then meeting Mandy initially, I thought, oh, gosh, the blurb seems a bit harsh on her. I wonder, though, if you could reflect for me on the pressures of a young woman, any young woman, but particularly a young woman like Mandy, in a small town, and the role that marriage plays in the dynamic of a woman's life, because it's very different for her than it would be for any man in the novel and many of the women.
I think in a small rural community like that, if you marry a farmer, because they're isolated, because it's a battle, because it's all about survival and there's so many things that can thwart them, you've got to marry someone that will support you and work with you, that will take an interest in farming and understand that you can't go for a holiday in the middle of harvest, that your life is going to be dictated by certain things, by the weather, by the worldwide markets, by vermin, by weeds, all that kind of stuff. So if you marry someone, you know, you're marrying the community, you're marrying the way of life, and you work towards that in much the way that the other character, Isabel, has. Now, Merrily's not exactly a good farmer's wife, but she's a good supportive partner, and she's the one that ultimately does the one thing that makes Mitch take action. So they're not really suitable. You can't really have a suitable partner in that book, but Merrily is the more suitable, and Mandy thought that she was going to be suitable and thought that when she got married she would automatically assume a position, that privileged position of Mitchell Bishop's wife, but she didn't understand that you have to work for it and you have to kind of be it. Farmers' wives also need to be able to drive a tractor, drive a chaser bin, drop the kids off at school, cook dinner for 50, sell wheat online, dip sheep, you know, like all those sorts of things. And you need to be a kind of strong person to do all of those things, strong in the right ways, like Isabel. Isabel is quite typical.
Well, yeah,
of
I was really interested in
women these days.
I was so interested in Isabel, though, because I feel like you were engaging with this bigger discussion, and perhaps Isabel and Mandy were flip sides of a coin, to use a cliche here. But this idea of the female as in the supportive role to the farmer, and Isabel seems particularly to rail against that, and the idea of the woman could be a farmer, whereas as Mandy was always only ever viewed as potentially a companion. But I mean, you just the women's lives on the land are a constant source. Esther's survival alone. You've got Neroli and her search for a place that ultimately has her leave for Sydney. Lana and JC's sort of strange love triangle. And then Isabel, the resentment that she has that her daughter might be dispossessed in the way that she was from the land. But then that's tangled up with this love for her brother and her father.
It's a very complicated thing. And it has to do with succession too, which is a really big issue in rural families now, because girls are going to agricultural college. Girls are being farmers in their own right because technology's made it possible. It's not as arduous as it once was. It's more science-based these days. So it is a possible thing for a woman to be a farmer. So I'm kind of representing the traditional way of having the supportive wife and the way of the future.
The forces, though, that you ally against Mitch seem almost insurmountable. You've got the world of land, town and water. Reconciling them is almost this Gordian knot of intersecting interests. And Mitch himself, he rails at what he perceives as his own weakness and struggles to make the choices that we learn he ultimately must. And I wonder, did you see Mitch in any way, and perhaps people who work the land, the farmers, as kind of almost Shakespearean protagonists in the way these forces ally together against him?
Absolutely. And I love that. I like that you said that, because even it's Shakespearean that even when it does rain, you know, it's still not a good thing because the rain hasn't come on time and it's done more damage than it should. Ghastly things happen out there to farmers with machinery and accidents, and yet there's all that gorgeousness of the life's cycle, the fatalistic destiny of it, and all under this vast canopy of beautiful blue sky and, you know, endless stars at night. And they are all in tune with the seasons and the way the land is, and they watch their sheep and they love their sheep and they feed their sheep and then they send them off to slaughter and we eat them as chops. So, you know, there's all that kind of stuff that goes on in the farmer's life day to day. So, you know, that's been apparent to me since I was a kid.
Now, Rosalie, I've had such a fantastic discussion with you and I'm so glad we've delved right into the year of the farmer. Let's end where every good day and bad should end, because despite the diversity of the community that you unfold and their varied histories, their grudges, they all end up at the pub. And I wondered, do we give enough credit to pubs in our writing and in our popular consciousness?
Oh, God, no. Everything happens at the pub. You know, the people that wash in and out of pubs, the things that are said, the knowledge that is gained, like alibis are created. You can tell the time by when people appear at the pub. You know, there was a man in my hometown that for years would go to the pub and have three beers and then start behaving erratically. He had an illness and the barman would just put half a dozen cans in front of him and that would be his signal to leave. And so he would leave and then he would wind his way home talking to lampposts and acting erratically, but everybody knew. And they knew he was harmless and he was sent home safely. But, you know, I could look out my window and see that man and know approximately what time it was and where he was going and what would be happening in his own home. And his wife would be looking after him and all that sort of stuff. So being a place of social, political, emotional and psychological argument, it's also a place of nurturing, and it's about history and people, you know, community. So the pubs are, you know, when the pub dies, the town is basically dead. There's nowhere for people to socialise.
You are listening to Final Draft, and I'm speaking with Rosalie Ham. Her latest novel is The Year of the Farmer, and it is wonderful, amazing, intriguing, a little bit damaging. I felt like I needed therapy afterwards, I confess to Rosalie. Rosalie, thank you so much for joining me and taking the time.
It's been excellent. I've loved the discussion. Thank you, Andrew.
Bluesfest Touring presents Snarky Puppy at the Enmore on Sunday, 21st April. This triple Grammy award-winning collective bring jazz, funk, R&B, soul, fusion, jam band and pop instrumental to a whole new level. Snarky Puppy, freeform wizardry on Easter Sunday at the Enmore. Tickets through Ticketek. Also appearing at Bluesfest, proud 2SER sponsor.
Good morning. Yes, you are on 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft. My name is Andrew Popel. There's a little bit left of the show, not much. I do want to share a few things with you before I say goodbye for another morning. Now, first of all, thank you to Rosalie Ham. Rosalie is the author of The Year of the Farmer that we have been discussing today, and very much appreciate those perspectives and insights. I mean, I think as a as a city boy, like I'm broadcasting pretty much from the middle of the city here, it sometimes is easy to forget different perspectives on the world, the Australia that we live in. And so check out the Year of the Farmer and get an idea of what drought actually means for rural communities. Now, if you want to listen back, if you want to actually discover more of that interview with Rosalie Hamm, I would recommend checking out the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. On the Great Conversations podcast, I get to share extended interviews, bits of the conversation that didn't make it to air, outtakes, jokes that I share with the authors, and that Rosie Hamm's The Year of the Farmer, it's coming up on this week's podcast. There is a new way to discover books on 2SER as well. The new podcast is called the 2SER Book Club. Tess Connery and I discuss new releases, and we give you some recommendations on what you should be reading. Wherever you get your podcast, you know, iTunes, Podcatcher, Pocket Casts, you can subscribe to the Great Conversations podcast and the 2SER Book Club. Now, coming up over the next couple of weeks is the 2SER Supporter Drive. Once a year, we as a community radio station ask you, the listener, to help us make great radio. It's one thing to get behind the microphone and talk. It is another thing to be part of the community that listens and really makes this Sydney community radio station a community. And that's when we ask you, the listener, to donate, to help us as a community radio station. You know, we have very little funding. We're not a commercial network. And your donations are everything to us. So if you want to support, go to 2ser.com/support and you can make a donation or become a subscriber. And your contribution helps shows like Final Draft go to air every week. Now, I'm going to say goodbye. Next week, I will be back. It's going to be a supporter drive show where I'm going to be talking more to you about why you should support 2SER and why you, the listener, are so important to us. I'm going to leave you with some music, but don't go anywhere. The Vulture's Nest is coming up. They are just a fantastic way to get into the week's news and really discuss some of the issues with a lighter perspective. Coming up, this is from Marissa Nadler. It's called You're Only Harmless When You Sleep. This has been Final Draft. I'm Andrew Popel. I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
Skies upon us as it freeze over our sheets. None drown by lust, lawlessness. You saw my death in a dream. I'm forever empty in what you're trying.